Today's podcast session is supported by Upheal. So if you ask a therapist who's doing clinical work what the bane of their existence is, usually progress notes are in the top 1 to 2. I'm not naming any names, but when I was doing clinical work, I remember I had several colleagues who would get so backed up on clinical notes, so they would end up spending their nights and weekends trying just to catch up. Honestly, who wants to do that? And this is where Upheal comes in. Upheal is AI-powered case notes. Now, I know for many of us, when we hear the word AI, there's like a natural skepticism. And honestly, I had that skepticism as well until I got to meet with the Upheal team and learn about some of the many ways that they are doing this in a way that is HIPAA compliant and also doesn't sell data to anyone and also protects our clients as well. You can learn more about Upheal and the awesome work that they're doing in the world by going to sellingthecouch.com/Upheal. And Upheal is spelled U-P and then H-E-A-L, all one word. And at checkout, be sure to enter the promo code COUCH25, C-O-U-C-H, and the number 25 to get 25% off your Upheal plan for the first 2 months.
Welcome to the Selling the Couch podcast, where our goal is to help you achieve your counseling private practice dreams. And now, the man who was stung by too many bees to count while growing up in India, psychologist and podcaster, Melvin Varghese.
Hey everyone, welcome to session 14 of the Selling the Couch podcast. So if you've been in the private practice space for any amount of time, you've likely heard of Casey Truffaut. Casey's a marriage and family therapist, a highly sought-after speaker, and she also wrote a best-selling book called Be a Wealthy Therapist, where she argued that going into private practice didn't mean a life of poverty, that we can all make a living while making a difference. In today's session of Selling the Couch, we explore the question of what makes a successful private practice, and what Casey has learned in her own journey as a clinician and after coaching over 75,000 clinicians in 5 continents. I also asked Casey some of the top questions that members of the Selling the Couch Facebook community had with regard to private practice building. Finally, be sure to listen through to the end as I have a special surprise for all of you. So here's my conversation with Casey Truffaut from BeAWealthyTherapist.net. Casey, welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hey, Melvin, glad to be here and thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, looking forward to our conversation. Casey, you know, a lot of times we all have assumptions about what it means to be successful in private practice. But what have you actually found are the ingredients in creating a successful private practice?
Well, you know, Melvin, I like to think of it as not just a private practice, but a therapy business. Because that really invites us to step up and be CEOs of our business. Mm. And when I first started coaching people back in the 1990s, if you can believe it, to build their practices, I focused on marketing. That was the big thing, was just talking about marketing. And I think, looking back, I think I did people a disservice, because when we are in an agency or we're in government work or we're going through our original training to become a therapist, we look at those in private practice, and it used to be that you could just move into private practice and that was very easy. Clients were easy to get. But the thing is that it really does take being a business owner. So as we see it, there's 5 ingredients to being a good, healthy, successful therapy business owner. The first is knowing your numbers. Really, what are your income? What are your expenses? How many calls come in? How many of those calls turn into clients? That's your conversion rate. What's your average length of stay? Most of us have some vague notion of this, but good CEOs know those numbers, and then we can strive to improve them. But we know what our normal January income is. Is this January comparable to last January? So it's really about knowing your numbers is step one. Step two is your business strategy. Whom are you called to serve? Literally, you must have a specialty these days, even if it's somewhat of a general one. But the idea being that if we don't know what our clients are wanting to pay for help with. And this is one of, I know we might talk about this later, but one of the mistakes people make is they seem to think that if we just talk about what we love doing, that clients will come. And the reality is we need to know what clients are wanting to pay for help with. Mm-hmm. The internet is giving us so much free stuff that, you know, it's what do people want to pay for help with? So that becomes your business strategy. Step three then is your creation plan for growth. And that is either and or your marketing plan and or your leverage plan if you already have a full practice. Step four then is taking that creation plan for growth and putting into action steps. What are the action steps that we take each day and each week? And then the fifth is what we call perspective. And it's arguably the most important. Where do I think I fit in terms of the rest of the world and success? Do I believe I can be successful? What are the limiting beliefs that I might have? And making sure that we understand what those are and having somebody, you know, I like to, Virginia Satir says we can't see our own backside. And I think she was right. So those are the five things. And we tend to just focus on one. And quite honestly, it's way harder when you just focus on marketing. When you focus on all five, your marketing becomes much, much easier.
Yeah, I think, what I hear is it's very comprehensive, but also you're also focusing on things like vision, but you're also trying to quantify, which I think is a part that clinicians often miss out on.
Yes.
You said one of the things, I wanted to break down each of those steps a little bit more.
Sure.
You said, just even starting with that first one, knowing your numbers, right? What are some of the things that you have found helpful, just at a very practical level, in actually measuring that return on investment and where your clients are coming in and all those things?
Well, I think, and not even return on investment, but the idea that if 10 people call me, how do I respond on that phone call? Do I return that phone call? We therapists have some of the worst reputations in the world. Recently I called a therapist, and on her voicemail it said, I'll call you back in 24 to 48 hours, and if I don't, call me back. Mm-hmm. No client is going to do that. My husband ran off with a bank teller. My kid's on drugs. I want help this afternoon. I don't want help in 48 hours. Yeah. So we know that the first person who talks to the client gets the client. And then if 10 people call, how many am I able to talk with right away? And how many become clients? If you have an insurance-based practice, that number should be probably 60 to 90% of the people that call should become clients. If you have a cash-only practice, it probably should be anywhere from 30 to 60%. If you're doing better than that, that's fantastic. But that's your conversion percentage. And the thing is that we may be doing a ton of marketing and really good marketing and getting lots of calls. But if we're not converting them on that intake call into a client, because we've shown them in that call that we can help them and we've helped them through their scared spots and they actually become clients, we're losing a ton of money. And people think, well, I'll just go market more. Well, you can, but there's all these places we're leaking money all over the place. So that's one example.
If you thought about like that voicemail example that you gave, what would you say on that voicemail instead?
My voicemail every day says, because I own a counseling center as well as Be a Wealthy Therapist. And so we change that voicemail every single day. And it says, hello, you've reached the Orange County Relationship Center. And it's Wednesday, April 8th. We must have just stepped away from our desk, but we'll get back to you within 2 hours. If you leave your name and number, we'll get back shortly. If you'd like to book an appointment yourself, you can do so at our online scheduler at blah, blah, blah.
Mm. Yeah, there's a custom aspect to it.
And there's a feeling that somebody's like, we must have just stepped away. We'll get back to you within 2 hours or we'll get back to you shortly. Means that I have this hope that you really are.
Yeah, right. And it values the client.
Right.
This is more of a technical question, but how do you actually, do you guys use some sort of a program to create those custom ones, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's called Casey Gets Up Every Morning and Records It.
That's unbelievable technology.
it's a habit. It's like I take a shower and after the shower, I change the voicemail message. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like one theme that's been coming up with all these guests is like the importance of just a daily habit, right? Like even something as small as that, just taking a few minutes to do that. I mean, what that communicates and the power of that.
And I can't get past this idea of the first person that talks to the client gets the client. We've seen that over and over and over again. You know, we need to get past our fear of being on the phone, and we need to be able to pick up that phone and join with the client and be able to have answers to the question when somebody, when I pick up the phone and I say, hi, Orange County Relationship Center, and somebody says, how much do you charge? How do you manage that conversation? That then becomes a key measure into your conversion.
Right. So what are some of the questions that folks generally ask, the potential clients generally ask, that clinicians should be ready to answer?
Do you take insurance? How much do you charge? When can I get in? Do you have a sliding scale?
And then you said
you need to have the answers to those questions before you answer the phone.
Right. And it sounds like to some degree you need to be confident in being able to say that clearly.
So I agree, confidence is really important, Melvin, but I also think it has to do with who's in charge of that conversation. If a client calls up and just starts asking me questions, I'm not going to willy-nilly answer the questions. It sort of like takes me out of the picture. I'm the one that leads that conversation and then joins with the client. That's the key. What is the purpose of that conversation? It's joining with the client. And then having the conversation. So when somebody says, how much do you charge? I say, I'm happy to answer that question. But first, can you just tell me a little bit about what's going on to make sure that we're the right place for you?
Right. So you're sort of establishing the context. You said a second part of that was you want to show them that you can help. What are some of the ways that clinicians can do that?
It's just joining with them in that the outline I just gave you by answering the question that said, and I'm happy to answer that question. Whatever their question is, fees, sliding scale, insurance, whatever all that is, if you say, I'm happy to answer that, but first, let me hear a little bit about what's going on so that we can make sure that we're the right place for you. And then joining with them during that time, gosh, I'm so sorry. Wow, I can tell you've got a lot going on. Wow, this is really, you know, you're really forward thinking to think about, you know, it just, there's that positive regard, that prizing during that conversation that then makes that client want to be able to come to you. And lots of times, regardless of whether you take their insurance or regardless of what you charge, they now feel that you have joined with them and they feel connected to you and they feel like you can help them.
Right. It reminds me of that Yalom quote where he talks about one therapist has many clients, but a client only has one therapist.
Oh, love that.
You said the second part of this is developing kind of a comprehensive business strategy. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. One of the things that we talk about is the empathy map. And the empathy map came from the design industry for cars and furniture. And what it is it's a set of quadrants where we ask questions about the ideal client. What does our ideal client say about their problem? What do they think but not say? What do they want? What is it they don't want? What are they afraid of? What do they believe? All of those things, when we can sit down and say, the ideal client to me comes with this language, and we can get into their head. But the idea about the empathy map, I've used many different exercises over the years, but the empathy map, what it really does is help us get to the language of what's going on in the client's head and heart. And then that language can be used everywhere in the marketing. And not only that, it then shapes the marketing plan, because part of that is, if I learn more about my ideal client by what do they say, what do they think but not say, what are they afraid of, all of those things, I can then ask the next logical question, which is, are they going to pay for help with this problem, which needs to be yes in order to go further with it. And then second, where are they going to be hanging out where I might be able to get to know them or service them in some way?
Yeah, asking all of those questions, I think it's almost like dominoes, right? Like if you don't have that first piece, then the rest of it won't fall.
Right. Well said.
And you said the third part is actually the creation of that plan.
Yeah, it's the creation of the plan for growth. So how is it, once you know, so my business strategy is I want to serve these kinds of people with one-to-one therapy or whatever it is that you're offering. Right. So that becomes your business strategy, step number two. Then step number three is saying, okay, how am I going to attract the people with that problem into my practice? And if I'm already full, how am I going to leverage my time to make more per hour and help more people? That then becomes the plan. And the plan, like you said, from Domino's just literally falls from knowing your business strategy. And it's just really beautiful.
Casey, you're bringing up such a good point, which is I think for any business to be successful, at some point you need to have some systems in place.
Yeah, systems are extraordinary. I think, you know, a definition of a system is a set of procedures that you do repetitively to provide a consistent result. I think, you know, this is one of the huge things that I'm teaching now is that it's not all about marketing. It really is about setting up systems, your marketing systems, your fee negotiation, setting cancellation, your technology systems, your vacation systems, your personnel systems, all of these systems. The more that you can set those up and document those, it's really going to be amazing, not only in the efficiency of your business, but so that your clients get a consistent result from you each time. And each client gets a consistent result. What is it like to come into your space? How often do you return phone calls? All of those kinds of things, if we don't pay attention to them, our clients aren't going to get the results that they want. And, you know, this is about being a business owner.
I'm a big believer in systems perspective. And I think the other thing is when you have a uniform way of doing things, it allows you to measure how you're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things that I talked about on a call this week, and that is how do you measure how happy your clients are? Because Scott Miller tells us that 50% of people leave therapy before their goals are met. Hmm. Think about that from a marketing perspective. If 50% of your people are leaving early, you have to keep marketing to get more clients.
Right.
So how are you measuring that? How are you monitoring that?
All great points. And then you said the next part is sort of the perspective shift, right?
Step four was taking action. So knowing the action steps from your marketing plan or your creation plan. And then fifth is perspective. Hmm. And this is, Melvin, what really surprised me when I first started working with therapists, and that is why one of them would have one marketing plan and another would have almost the identical marketing plan, and one would be getting a full practice, you know, in 18 months, 2 years, and the other one would have four clients consistently. And I could not understand what the difference was. And it really is about perspective. And this is about digging deep. We therapists seem to have common belief about being seen, S-E-E-N. Hmm. Some of us are very afraid of being seen. We're concerned about being successful, both what if I am too successful and what if I'm not successful enough. And there's all of these hidden things that end up constricting our growth.
Casey, just shifting a little bit, you know, I asked the folks from the Selling the Couch community some questions that they had for you. And so I wanted to ask you a few of those.
Sure.
So one of the questions that kept coming up is, what are the best ways to market a practice at a local level?
I'm going to open that by saying that I am a huge introvert. I mean, I'm probably the biggest introvert that most anybody knows, that I know for sure. I'm terrified around people that I don't know. On the flip side, I had to build this business and I had to learn how to do it as an introvert. What I found kind of by accident is that so many therapists have left the community for the internet because we all want to hide behind our computers. And we think that social media is going to get us clients. We think that our online is going to get us clients. And while that may happen on occasion, this vacuum that has been left in the community is huge. And what we find is that the people in the local community don't have somebody to refer to. Mm. So for me, it was, how do I get out and connect with those people as an introvert? And what I learned is that when I could do a speaking engagement and not talk at them, but have a speaking engagement where it's an interaction and it's really like facilitating a group discussion. So the format is, why is it hard to, whatever the talk title is, what does not work to get the solution to whatever the problem is, and what does work? So why is it hard to raise kids in the age of Miley Cyrus? You know, what does not work? What does work? And oh, by the way, working with a therapist does work, and then seeding in some success stories. But more importantly, having a process to move somebody from audience member into client. And this is offering a consultation in your office that shows them what it's like to be in the office. It's kind of a Carl Rogers-ish unconditional positive regard thing where we actually ask them, what's going on now? What would you like to have happen? What will that mean to you? And oh my goodness, what happens if nothing changes? And that format of that free consultation offered from the stage can get anywhere from 10% to 50% of the audience members to become clients. Yeah. To me, and to be able to do that as an introvert, very easy. So that's probably the hidden jewel that I see right now.
How do you actually, do you reach out to like local communities, or how do you even get started with something like that?
So first, we go back to our empathy map, and that is going to tell us who the ideal client is and where, and then we think about where would they be hanging out. So if I'm working with tired, overworked moms, I'm not going to go to the Rotary Club that might have people in their 60s, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, so think about where we're going. So then, okay, so if I were working with couples, for example, places of worship would be a good place to start. And then it's reaching out and knowing that the program directors who run these organizations, so you're looking for, I have my clients make a list of 20 organizations or people they know that might have something to do with a place they could speak. And then go through those 20 and just keep, you know, saying I'm a therapist in the area specializing in blah, blah, blah. And I'm wondering if you have speakers come in. You look through the paper at all the different kinds of groups that your ideal client might be going to. You think about all the professional organizations they might be going to. And then you reach out and then you come up with two talk titles, one kind of straight and one a little bit more out there. It's the same talk, but offer them two talk titles. You'll learn a lot about the audience that way.
That's great. You know, the other question that I had for you is, what have you noticed is probably the biggest mistake that clinicians, or even whether they're just starting out or even seasoned private practitioners, make in marketing their services?
Well, there's two. I don't know if I could choose between one. The first one is they try to sell their services and sell their counseling versus how can I serve you? Okay, so all marketing.
It's a mindset difference, sounds like.
It's not only a mindset difference, which is true, but it's also an action. People are walking around handing out their business cards rather than getting to know somebody. Every interaction is an intake, and if we could just act that way, people would fall in love with us. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is underestimating the time it takes. People say, well, I want to see 20 hours of clients a week. And I'll say, okay, well, then how many are you seeing now? Three. Well, that means you have 17 hours you could be marketing your business. Oh, I don't have that time. Well, then where are you going to get that time if you're going to have 20 hours?
Right. It doesn't translate over.
Right.
Casey, thank you so much for our conversation. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Casey, if folks want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to reach you?
Sure. You can visit we have free Wealthy Therapist Village calls. Once a month, they're half an hour of inspiration and community. And you can find out about that at just bewealthytherapist.net/village, bewealthytherapist.net/village.
Okay, great. And I'll link to that in the show notes. Okay. Casey, thank you again.
Thank you, Melvin.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Casey Truffaut. So the biggest thing that I'm taking away from this conversation is just the importance of having data to figure out how your small business is doing. And I'm just a big fan of it. It's something that I'm learning as I continue to build the Selling the Couch blog and the podcast, the importance of numbers, because otherwise you have very little idea of what's working and what's not working. And I think for your private practice, that same principle applies, and it's what Casey's saying. As much as possible, try to figure out how you can quantify some of the things with regard to finances, the number of clients that are coming in and out. That will give you a better idea of how you're doing, and I think it'll also give you a better peace of mind with regard to how things are working out. So here's the part where I wanted to share a surprise with you. So as I mentioned at the intro, Casey wrote a best-selling book, and I am going to give away 4 copies of that book. All you have to do is go to sellingthecouch.com, and then on the top right-hand corner, there's a way to join the Facebook group. Just join the Facebook group, and there will be a post in there. And we'll run the contest here for the next week or so. And I'll pick 4 random people, and I will send you a copy of the book. Thank you again for all of your support. I really appreciate it. And the show notes for today's episode are at sellingthecouch.com/session1-4. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in the quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcastingworkshop.